And call on Councilor Mezzapelle to say the prayer.
Grant us perception and patience that justice, truth, and honesty may be evident in our planning and our governing. Make us aware of the needs of each part of this town of Caledon. Save us from parochialism that divides, and so create in us a desire for progress and responsible action, that all in our words and deeds may be in accord with thy will, to the glory of thy holy name.
Well, Canada. Would anybody like them to move the approval of the agenda? Council Enders has moved it, seconded by Councilor Mezzapelle. That the agenda for the June 16th, 2015 council meeting be approved. All those in favor? Motion's carried. Okay, is there any disclosure of pecuniary interest? Okay, seeing none. We have two items in closed session. Moved by Councillor Ennis and seconded by Councillor Mezzapelle, that the council will go into closed session under Section 239 of the Municipal Act for the purpose of, do I read them? The confidentiality report ADM 2015-046, a proposed disposition of land by the municipality, presentation of the proposal to list the Rose Hill Schoolhouse for sale on MLS. And the second one is a confidential report DP 2015-061 regarding personal matters about an identifiable individual, 2015 Heritage Caledon Award of Excellence. Okay, I guess we're going to go. All those in favor of this? Motion's carried. We've come back from the closed meeting, and we decided on a realtor. Okay, I'll read it out. That realtor number 4 be selected to list the property for sale. It was moved by Barb Shaughnessy, and seconded by Jennifer Ennis. Okay. That confidential report, ADM 2015-046, regarding proposals from realtors to list and sell the town-owned property known as the Rose Hill Schoolhouse, be received. That realtor number 4 be selected. We decided to list the property for sale as outlined in staff report ADM 2015 and to report all others of purchase to the project manager. And that staff be directed and to negotiate with the elected realtor. That the clerk and council be authorized to execute an agreement between the town and the approved realtor for the listing of the sale of the property. And that the project managers be authorized to negotiate with prospective purchasers to obtain an offer that is within the range of the approved realtor's appraisal. And that the project manager real estate be authorized to accept the highest offer from a prospective purchaser that is within the range. And that the project manager be authorized to extend the marketing time of the property with the approved realtor if no accepted offers are submitted during the initial marketing period. And that the project manager bring a report to council for consideration of an offer below the range of the approved realtor's appraisal if there are no other acceptable offers. That the mayor and clerk be authorized to execute any agreements and documents necessary to complete the purchase and sale transaction. Okay, and I'd just like to delete the third last paragraph, that the project manager of real estate be authorized to extend the marketing time of the property with the approved realtor. We decided that wasn't going to be in there. Okay, would anybody like to move this? Questions? Rob?
Acting Clare McClure, I just wonder if it would be, and I don't know the process, to make one amendment. I think where you talked about taking the highest bid within the range, yeah. My recommendation would be to remove reference to within the range and take the highest bid.
Period.
I want to make sure that we have a minimum value, but you know the sky's the limit after that.
Well, I think that's common sense that the realtor that...
It's just if it went outside the range, technically, we wouldn't be able to accept it.
Okay. I would think that would be common sense, but what do you do? That's not mine, is it? Okay, we have an amendment that paragraph 4 be deleted. Moved by Councillor Mezzapelli and seconded by Councillor Ennis. Everybody in favor of that? Okay, it's carried. I'd like to make the main motion as amended. Is there any mover to that? Any more comments? All in favor? Okay. Motion's carried. Okay. The second thing we deal with, moved by Barbara Shaughnessy, and seconded by Councillor Mezzapelli. That's Councillor Ennis, I guess. Couldn't read the writing. That confidential report DP 2015-061 regarding personal matters about an identical individual, including municipal employees, 2015 Heritage Cattle and Award of Excellence be received. And that the recommended recipients of the 2015 Heritage Cattle and Award of Excellence be approved as directed. All in favor of that motion? It's carried. Okay, we'll be moving on to our presentations. Okay, first presentation, we got Travis Greeley and Steve Bunkin from Walk and Breakfast event to be held on June 20th, 2015. Would they like to come up? Okay, go ahead.
Good morning, members of council. My name is Travis Greenlee. This is Steve Bunyan, and we, along with the men with me today, are proud members of the Caledon Dufferin Mentors Committee. I'd like to start by thanking you very much for making some time on your busy agenda this morning. Promise we won't take up too much of it. Mentors is a group of volunteer men working in our community with Family Transition Place. Our goals are simple, to promote gender equality, to build healthy relationships, redefine masculinity, and most importantly, end violence against women and girls in our community. To illustrate why we think these issues are important and why our group originally came together, I'm just going to quickly outline some statistics for you. Currently, 51% of Canadian women will experience at least one form of physical or sexual violence in their lifetime. For us, this is an unacceptable number. That means a young girl growing up in Canada today has a better chance of facing violence in her life than living a life free of violence. Locally, here in our community, Family Transition Place, the organization that supports abused women and children, housed 115 women and 15 children last year for abuse days. That's up 25% from the year before. Additionally, they also offered long-term abuse counseling to 500 women last year, also a marked increase from the year before. The issue that we're really outlining today is violence against women and girls, and for a long time that issue has been looked upon as a women's issue. The men on our committee strongly disagree with that stance. We believe it's a community issue, and the men in our community need to take a stand as well. Our voice needs to be heard. So for over the last 3 years, the Mentors group has done a number of initiatives to try and bring awareness to this cause. We've developed and run high school programs so young people can understand the dynamics of healthy and unhealthy relationships, as well as the root causes of domestic violence. We have also offered high school bursary awards to local high school males who have exhibited and exemplified the ideals of males building healthy relationships in their communities. We've done community service presentations. We've also participated in the White Ribbon Campaign, which runs every November and culminates on December 6th in the National Day of Remembrance, remembering women who have lost their lives to domestic violence. We also operate an annual Father's Day breakfast, which Steve is going to outline for you in a minute or two. We've done all these things in the last 3 years, and what we've come to realize is there is so much more to do. People are still either unaware or unwilling to engage in brave conversations about this issue. To put it in context, if I were to come to you today and address an intersection in our community that was so dangerous, people were injured and sadly sometimes even killed because of it, there would be a public outcry to actually address it. And I imagine I would have a lot more people standing with me if we were addressing that. We do have an issue where people are injured, sadly, on a regular basis and sometimes even lose their lives, and people are either afraid or unwilling to engage in the conversations that are causing it. So we are here today to ask for your leadership and your support in addressing these important issues, and to kind of get into specifics of how maybe you might be able to do that, I'm going to pass it over to Steve.
Hi, good morning, everybody. I just wanted to share with you our upcoming second annual Mentors Breakfast, which is taking place on June 20th at between 9 and 12 at Hoagie's Sports Bar in Orangeville, and that's at 275 Alder Street. This year, for the first time, we're going to be inviting men and boys who are showing up for our walk to take part in a symbolic 100-meter walk in women's high-heeled shoes. Don't worry, that's optional. We still want you to show up. You don't have to walk in the shoes. The shoes are provided, and we have varying sizes for everyone. After we complete our walk, we're going to be having an awesome breakfast, and you're going to get a chance to hear some speeches from some members of the Mentors team and other people involved in the community. I also extend the invite to all the female members and ask you to bring your partners and sons and cheer on the brave men who will be taking part in this walk. At this walk, you'll also get the opportunity to sign the White Ribbon Pledge. And I wanted to take a moment and ask the male members, how many people are aware of the White Ribbon Pledge and or signed it? Okay, thank you. So basically, the White Ribbon Pledge is basically you're saying you pledge never to condone, commit or remain silent about violence against women and girls. As Travis shared with you, there is a horrible record in our community for domestic violence and violence against women and girls, and this problem needs to be solved. It's a community problem, and I'm inviting you all to come to the walk and breakfast, but I'm also inviting the male members to come out, sign the white ribbon pledge, and be the leaders in the community that we need, because we need to start from within the community and build from it, and that leadership comes from the top. Thank you.
Okay, is there any question? Well, we got a bunch of questions. Annette Groves first, Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Mr. Acting Chair. Thank you for your presentation. At one point in my life, I did serve as an executive director for a women's shelter. So I certainly know their role, their function, and their importance. The unfortunate thing that I saw in the shelter, that it grew. And there was no room in the shelter sometimes to house these women and children. It is a sad, sad thing. It's encouraging when you have a business and your business grows, but when you see that an organization like this or a facility like that is grown and you have to say to a woman with her children or just a woman who is crying out for help that you have no room anymore, that is a very sad, sad reality. It's also, and I think part of the challenge is women are afraid of coming forward because they're being bullied by the abuser. They're afraid of losing their children. They're afraid of losing. Some women wouldn't know where to begin. They don't work. Sometimes the spouse or the partner is the breadwinner, and so it's a little bit intimidating for some of these women. So I congratulate you, all of you, for stepping up to the plate and for doing this. I think it's important that it is seen not as a women's issue, but certainly that as the male, that you are lending support and you are recognizing and you are saying, we understand it, we get it, we're here to support you. So thank you for coming forward, and certainly anything that I can do to help, I'm happy to do that. I think, again, even in the schools, it is important that, you know, young girls don't accept their boyfriends bullying them or threatening them or just controlling them, that is not acceptable. That is a vicious cycle that starts, and I think that's where we need to get to, is the root cause. Some of these abusers, where does it come from? It's a learned behavior. It's a behavior that they've seen in their own homes, and they carry that forward and thinking it's normal. You know, the other thing that we have to look at, and I guess I need to be careful how I say it, but culturally, what's acceptable? And I think we need to reach out to the different cultures as well to say, you know, there's an education portion here that you can do to educate that this is not acceptable. It is completely not acceptable. So thank you again for stepping up, and I'd be happy to, if you'd like to correspond with me afterwards, I'm happy to do that because I've been a real advocate for stopping violence against women and young girls. So thank you.
Okay, Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you. I just wanted to say thank you for coming today. It's a subject that is near and dear to my heart, and I appreciate the efforts to bring it to everybody's attention. Violence, whether it's physical violence or mental, tormenting people, it's unacceptable. And most often people don't realize. You could look around this room and wonder, you don't know who has been affected by this, because we have a tendency to stay silent. And I support your effort, and I hope more people support your effort, because this is a bigger issue than more people realize. So thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Beffert, please.
Thanks very much for coming. I first heard of your group when Pete Renshaw stepped forward to start to explain it, as Pete can only do so well. And my first reaction was, here's a big guy putting himself out there. And ever since, I've seen what's happened with the group that's, as it's growing. And I can see that with you coming here today. So thank you for that, because you are putting yourself out there for something that we need to know about, but we just haven't taken the time to know about. My only hope right now is that they run out of my size of shoe before I get there. And I appreciate Tony spending so much time in, at our level here in Caledon, supporting your group. And just thanks a lot, guys, and I hope that Saturday morning goes really well for you. Thanks a lot.
Councillor Downey.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you for coming, and thank you for all the work that you do. I really believe that it takes, you know, a great group of people to remove the stigma around the conversation, and that's the first step, and it's so important to remove that stigma. So I just want to thank you for taking the lead in your community to do that, or our community. And I have shoes that you can borrow, Doug.
Councillor Mazzapelli's next.
Thank you, Chair McClure. I just wanted to thank you all for coming. And you hit it square on the head when you said this is a community issue. It affects men, it affects women. Women, obviously, and young girls are the victims, and often and most of the time at the hands of men. And I think in the evolution of addressing this issue, getting to a point where men are coming forward and forming groups to address the issue, I think is... My hope is the proverbial turning of the corner in really addressing the issue, is when we get the population that generally represents the perpetrators actually coming out and speaking and raising awareness about the issue. I think that is a very telling tale on us getting to the place we need to with regarding the issue about violence against women and young girls. So I applaud you for all that you've done, and wish you every great success. Thanks.
I have no more questions, but I agree with all the rest of the councillors that this is an important issue. And I got one more councillor I'd like to speak to, Councillor Bafford.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I did forget one thing. When I worked with and spoke at an event that you had at the Bolton Library, one of the requests was, when I signed, I also committed as a councillor to upholding the goals of your group. And what I would like to do is challenge each of the male members in particular on council to sign that pledge, and not only as an individual but as a member of council, to uphold the goals that you folks are working towards. I think if we do that as a group, it means an awful lot, and Family Transition House would appreciate us doing that. So I challenge my fellow colleagues on council to sign that document and to actually live that as they go through their work.
Okay, that'll be all. But you have important goals, and thank you for coming, and we all appreciate your project. Thank you. Next, I'd like to invite Michelle Harris, Executive Director of the Headwater Tourism, and for her annual update.
Okay, perfect. Good morning, Council and staff. Thank you for inviting me for our annual delegation. I'm delighted to have with me today our board chair, Stacy Copeland, who is the general manager of the Best Western in Orangeville, and Ron Monroe, who is the past chair of our board of directors, as well as the chair of Central Counties Tourism. I stand before you today to give you a little bit of an update on what we've been up to for the past year, but also because we're at that time of year, we traditionally sign a four-year municipal services agreement with the town of Caledon to deliver tourism services on your behalf within the regional context of the Headwaters region. And that agreement is up at the end of this calendar year, so we thought it was an appropriate time to have a discussion on what we've achieved and what the future looks like for tourism in both Caledon and Headwaters. First of all, I wanted to mention the tourism landscape is a crowded one. And it was probably 4 or 5 years ago when we had a meeting with the Deputy Minister of Tourism at the time at the outset of the implementation of the regional tourism organizations and the tourism policy that was being developed at the province. And the minister at the time said that when they were putting together this strategy, that they realized that the Ministry of Tourism was the only ministry that touched every other single ministry within the provincial government. And it was one of those aha moments for us. And I think Councillor Beffert was at that session that we had. And it is a complicated business, and tourism is not just about the final output of tourism marketing materials and listing of an inventory. It is a piece of an economic development strategy around community sustainability and vibrance. And I've just outlined up there the various groups who are involved in tourism. Everything from small sector groups and individual businesses all the way up to the right to the National Tourism Organization, which is the Canadian Tourism Commission. A DMO, which is the middle area there, stands for a Destination Marketing Organization. And that is what Headwaters Tourism is on behalf of our partners that work together at a regional level to promote tourism for the greater Headwaters area. We see ourselves as a middle piece of the continuum. There's no hierarchy there. It's our goal, we believe, to understand what needs to happen at both the local level and the national level and feed things up and down and facilitate the development of tourism. From 2012 to 2015, we have had the support of our municipal partners, including the Town of Caledon, the County of Dufferin, the Town of Mono, the Town of Shelburne, and the Town of Erin. Part of that agreement focused on 5 areas of work for us. It's outlined in the package that you have, but it focuses on product development, marketing, communication, advocacy, and clearly I've put advocacy and partnerships twice, that's governance and sustainability. Our current funding model for tourism as of 2015 is $186,000 plus a year. It is broken down as outlined above. The Town of Caledon funds 46% of our regional tourism framework model that works out to $1.46 per resident in Caledon. I've pulled some statistics from the Ministry of Tourism, and I took the statistics that were for the Central Counties region, which includes York, Durham, and Headwaters. Headwaters is 7.3% of the overall Central Counties region. So I've pulled the stats based on that and then pulled Caledon stats based on population. We like to look at tourism as an investment in economic development rather than a handout to an organization. For your investment of $86,000 in municipal tax revenues alone, tourism attributes $805,000 to your municipal tax revenue. So the return on investment for tourism development as part of an economic development strategy is strong. Numbers are hard to see because I pulled that off a different report, but for us, the collective impact of working together at a regional level is where we believe our strongest strength is. I've pulled this media impressions chart up here. Last year, we invested $500 in cash, and we have garnered $88,000 in earned media through partnerships that we've developed with various regional partners and local partners, resulting in over 1.7 million media impressions. So that's the number of people who have seen or heard our messaging through traditional media channels. We also do a lot of work, as most of the world does now, at a digital level. We have our website, we have Facebook and Twitter pages. Year over year, the consumer engagement on our website has increased by 11%. Our Facebook engagement has increased by 33%, and our Twitter engagement has increased by 72%. Digital marketing has been a huge component of the strategic direction that the board has given us, and with Caledon as part of that board structure, we see the impact and the leverage that we are getting telling our Headwaters story. We also have the ability, because we work at a regional level and with various groups, we also have the ability to leverage funding as well. This is direct cash funding that we believe we have brought into the region between 2012 and 2015. Over $350,000 of additional support to the work we do to develop tourism throughout the region. In your package, you will have seen our 2015-16 strategic undertaking. That's the fiscal year that we are in now, starting this past April. It has been an evolution, this strategy. Over the past 4 years, we have transitioned our model from what used to be a traditional visitor services model, where we would sit in a little shack at the corner of Highway 9 and 10 and hand out brochures, to really looking at tourism as a driver of economic sustainability. And as such, the work we do has evolved over the past 4 years. This year, you can see our strategic undertakings are very much, I mean, you have the visitor guide in front of you. We have launched a new brand. We are telling our story about where Ontario gets real. We are introducing our people into the marketplace because we believe they are our strongest value proposition. We also believe they are what sets us apart in the consumer marketplace. We have developed a leading with the best program strategy, and that is working with those operators that we believe are market ready and best tell our story to consumers and visitors. It also helps raise the bar and create standards and mentorship by those businesses to other businesses within the region that are wanting to move into the tourism field. Obviously, you are well aware of the TO 2015 Pan Am Games. We have worked very, very closely with the town of Caledon over the past 4 years to leverage the impact of the games. We are really proud of the work we've done with the town. There's some specific things. You've probably seen the 26 or some of the 26 painted horses that are around the region. That was our attempt, instead of just having traditional signage, that we would have something impactful. We were also particularly pleased that it engaged other sectors of the community, specifically our artisans. We have a Pan Am Taste Trail that we will be, that launched actually last week or this past weekend in conjunction with the Torch Relay. We have 20 participating restaurants and food establishments who are going to showcase our local food culture to visitors to the games. In partnership with the town of Caledon and Humber College, last October we implemented and developed a tourism ambassador training program, which we have now rolled out to all service groups and businesses and municipal partners that are interested in taking that training. The last session was last week, and so we've been training our own operators and service groups to be tourism ambassadors. We've also worked with Equine Canada and the Ontario Equestrian Federation to further position our work in this area as horse country. We continue to expand our digital and consumer marketing. We work very hard with central counties to push our message up the channel. If you were listening a few minutes ago, I noted that Headwaters is 7.3% of central counties on the board. We probably have the loudest voice for such a small population because we feel ultimately that we need their support, and we have a very good handle on what we need to do here, and they've got the money to help support us. So part of the shift in direction at Central Counties is actually to work through DMOs like Headwaters to actually get our messaging out into the marketplace. Finally, we continue to develop our key priority sectors: horse and country, which is our equine work; nature and leisure, which is our soft outdoor tourism adventure strategy; fresh and local; arts and heritage; and festivals and events. As we look to discussions about what the future looks like for tourism in Headwaters, I've been attending a number of conferences. I was recently at one in San Francisco, not on the Headwaters Tourism Bill, on the Central Counties Bill, as well as I've been part of a rural tourism group that has been studying rural tourism out of the University of Guelph. And there are some significant trends that are happening in tourism, and I'm quite pleased to note that we are on top of these trends. We're not following or lagging behind. In fact, I think we're ahead of the curve on some of these. One of the first trends that was identified in San Francisco, that brand focus is critically important, and what your brand positioning is based on experiences that visitors will receive when they're in your area are critical. Unless you are Paris or New York or the Caribbean, it's highly unlikely that people will look for your community name, but rather are looking for the experiences that they can come to when they're in your region. So we, with our new branding, we think we're right on point there. You've probably heard me for years talking about partnership and collaboration and those t-shirts that I keep threatening to give everybody, but we're ahead of the curve. Everybody is talking about that. Tourism has changed how it's doing business across the world. It is looking at regional economic development partnerships and collaborations with agencies that understand the value of tourism as an economic driver. Obviously, technology and consumer engagement are important, but not just about how we use technology, but how we look at data to inform the activities that we do. This one, I believe, is really important. Point number four: tourism is shifting from a supply side to a demand side business. And that means in the past, a lot of people have been focusing on, you know, let's have lists of events, let's have lists of businesses, let's put it on a brochure or on a website, and people will come. Shifting that focus now, they're finding that what tourists are looking for is that we need to start thinking of this not as the tourism industry, but as a visitor economy. It shapes our thinking, and what we do in regards to tourism development needs to be looking at it through the lens of the visitor. What do we have? What are visitors looking for? And how do we further develop that product within our region to serve the needs of the visitor and ultimately encourage more visitor spending in our region? Final point, I learned this at the University of Guelph a couple weeks ago, and it speaks to me every day. Rural tourism development takes close to 10 years. It is not about going to the end of the value chain to build a brochure or a website or a visitor guide. That visitor guide that you have in front of you, which, touch wood, we've been getting tremendous response to, did not happen on day one. We've been working with the Town of Caledon and our other municipal partner support for the past 4 years to develop a tourism strategy. And what you see in front of you today is 4 years worth of work to put it into market. We believe so strongly that we finally have found our story and how to resonate and get that story out into the marketplace. And we believe with the continued support of our municipal partners, 4 years from now, we are going to be the Prince Edward County. And everybody holds that up in Ontario as the place, the one who did it first. And I would argue they did it because they were ahead of the curve on all of these things. I believe we will be and will surpass Prince Edward County because I think we have everything and more that they had 5 years ago. As we move into the future, and now I'd like to open that up to you in some conversation, we have been working really hard with the town to develop a strategy. As we look for your support for the next 4 years, we want to understand how we build on the success of what we've done, what your priorities are going to be for 2016 and beyond. Now that you have your own tourism strategy, understanding how we complement each other for collective impact, and then how we leverage and develop not only core financial model, but also are there projects where we could be working together to enhance the impact that we have collectively. That is my presentation, and now I'd like to open it up to conversation, if I may.
Got a question from Annette Groves first. Councillor Groves.
Thank you, through you, to Michelle. I agree. I think that tourism is a huge part of economic sustainability and viability. So the numbers that you have shown us, I think we've got a good return on our investment to Headwaters Tourism. Just a couple of questions.
Yep.
With the in terms of the BIA, we've got the Bolton BIA.
Yep.
How closely do you work with them?
We've worked through your staff, Sandra, a little bit. We're starting to liaise more closely for me. And if I go back to that first slide that I had here, which was this one, that continuum, it needs to be an integrated philosophy. So much of the work as we've been evolving this over the past couple of years is how we work with those associations and helping them understand what their role is and how they feed into us. So the Bolton BIA has now become part of our Leading with the Best program over the past year. And we're quite excited now because for us, the challenge has always been if it's us making assumptions on how tourism happens at the community level, we are just doing that, making assumptions. Whereas if we're having a conversation and we are part of the development together, then we can help support the needs of our businesses, our BIAs, and our communities. So we now have a field rep out in the field that is funded for us by Central Counties, and it is their role to work with myself and the communities in the BIA. So that is highly on our list.
Okay, so if I may suggest, because they now have a new board in
yep.
place, that it would be worth having a presentation at one of the meetings, at one of the BIA meetings. So I'm guessing maybe you can contact the chair or work
yep.
with Sandra to help schedule that, because I think that would be very helpful. The other thing is we now have a hotel, the Hampton
yes.
Inn Suites in Bolton, and I think that plays a vital role in terms of tourism. Are you working with them?
Very closely with them, actually. I've met with them multiple times. They are part of our Leading with the Best program. They are part of what we've got a media tour planned at the end of summer, which they are going to be part of. They were going to be part of it, the one we had in May, but they had other priorities. But we have a very good relationship with them, and they are a critical piece. Accommodation has always been, obviously, a challenge for our rural area, and it prohibits us from doing some of the things we want because we simply don't have the room night. So having a new accommodation property in Bolton, mm-hmm. I'm standing up and cheering
right.
when
so
it came to be.
Perfect. So they are having their grand opening
yes,
on July
2nd. Yes, and I have an invite.
Perfect. We hope to see you there. And the other thing, I drive by there several times, have a look. I go to A&W, and what's really nice to see, you do see people walking that are staying at the hotel. They're walking across the street. They're visiting the plazas. They're going to the restaurants. They're shopping, and I think that is a great piece in part of tourism. Accommodations are so, so important. We have companies in Caledon where, you know, they've got folks that come in from out of town, there's no place for them to stay. They were staying in Vaughan, they were staying in Brampton, wherever they're staying. And they're doing a lot of their spending in those other municipalities. So now that we have a hotel here, I would ask that you work very closely in helping to promote the hotel and having more people being drawn into the community and spending their dollars here. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we look forward to see you at the opening.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Councillor Beffers next.
Thank you, Michelle. It's always
Thanks.
A pleasure to see
thank you.
You. And I know we're going to get a good overview. And welcome to the others as well. I'm a convert, as you know. I've seen how you've grown, and I've seen how you've switched from one method of operation to the method that you use now in terms of product development. And I think that was a good move. It was because of your expertise that we did that, and that you did that, and I think it's worked out well, particularly as I watch the equine aspect of it. I have two areas that I simply want to comment on, and the first one is just a comment, and maybe the group, because I know Sandra and Rob represent as well, might talk and take this back. The second one I'd like your answer to. The first one has to do with the website. I'm just a little concerned that, you know, when we did our overview of tourism in Caledon, one of the things that came out was that people wanted to show off more. And Sandra's done a great job of that. But I just want to make sure that we're not both doing the same thing in terms of the website. So that's one thing that maybe as a group you could look at and see how there might be more cooperation. To me, our website should be your website, and your website should be our website. And that's what I'm saying, that we should look at that together so that we don't have to spend any more money and we have the same product. So I don't need an answer to that today, but it's just a thought that I've had lately as I've gone through and looked at both. The one issue is you talk about the tourism landscape, and then I've looked at the strategic undertakings, and particularly equine. Excellent job, and I'm sure you want to move on to other areas and do that. We have a problem in Caledon that's developed not just recently, but it's come to a head recently, and it has to do, in my opinion, with the rural tourism development that you talked about, and that's the Badlands. And we seem to be addressing it as an individual item. And yet, rural tourism development seems to me to be the larger item. So my two questions for you. Number one, have you been directly involved in that issue as our representatives for tourism? And number two, do you have any response to how you might help?
So I'd like to start with, I'm just going to reference the equine group, because the success of that has come about largely because there is a group of industry working together with our municipal partners and the Tourism Association to develop a holistic strategy around tourism development specifically for the equine sector. And that holistic approach, I truly believe, is how we've garnered success. For the Badlands, and I've been following it and I've seen the correspondence come through about it, there are infrastructure issues around the Badlands quite clearly. We also know it is probably one of our most iconic geographic assets that we have in Headwaters. People know about it. I can talk to people who know nothing about Headwaters, but I go, oh yeah, I know those hills, right? Looking at the Badlands as one piece alone, I think, is going to be a problem. You will note that we have last year put forward a soft adventure tourism strategy. We now have on our board a committee chair from the Credit Valley Conservation. We also work very closely with TRCA and CVC. You guys probably already know this, but both TRCA and CVC have, I guess merged is probably the wrong word, but in essence have merged operations where there's overlap. The only area that there is overlap among their jurisdictions is in Headwaters. It's a fabulous step in my mind at looking at an integrated strategy around soft adventure tourism development. In regards to the Badlands, that is one location where there's a, let's say, a bottleneck of tourists at peak times. But we know there are multiple geographic and natural heritage assets within Caledon and, in fact, within the larger Headwaters area. And my instinct is that if we could start to develop a strategy around tourism that focuses on these natural heritage assets, but that is holistic, and it's how you take advantage of all of the collective pieces we have. Not only might it solve or help solve some of the challenges with the Badlands, but oftentimes parking issues, critical mass of people during peak times, that happens in other jurisdictions too. It happens, we know, in Bell Fountain. So looking at this, how we move people around. The other point I'd like to make is if there is a holistic strategy around those rural natural assets, It also helps us move people around the region. And if at the end of the day you go back to where we started this conversation about tourism being an economic driver, and why we love visitors best is because they bring money, they spend it, and then hopefully they go home at the end of the day. We like to encourage people spending their money and moving it around all of our communities and to all of our businesses. So I believe this would be a role that Headwaters could actively get involved in, perhaps at the larger level, around how we develop a collective strategy to deal with these as a tourism driver. And we already have relationships with some of those people, probably over the past couple of years. And I'm very proud of the work we've done. But one of the things that I think we've done probably better than a lot of other DMOs is we have brought together those partnerships for the greater collective good. And we have relationships, and we're able to sort of sometimes come in as the third party, not directly involved in an issue, but bringing that outside lens to help facilitate moving things along. And I believe this ties in very closely to our nature and leisure product and our soft adventure strategy that we have identified.
Well, I really appreciate that answer, and I know this isn't easy, and I know Joanna, for example, is working really, really hard with the group that's looking at the Badlands, but what you're saying is, to me, more of the holistic piece, because there are so many issues that are connected. So we can't solve it today. I appreciate your answer. I think have we got a job for you, but we need to figure out how that could happen. Because every group I speak to, including the people who are sort of fighting the Badlands, say the same thing.
Yep.
But we're not getting there yet. So I appreciate that you've got some expertise, and I know Joanna and I have chatted, and I know Rob and I have chatted, and maybe we can pull that together. So I think we're getting a good bang for the buck. I appreciate all the work you've done. And those horses, just talk to my grandkids. They are terrific. They're trying to find it if they can see all 26.
Yep.
That's what they're trying to do now, and they're driving their dad crazy because they have to drive around and see if they can find more.
Take selfies, post them. Yep. That's yep. Hashtag parade of horses.
We were lucky, though. On Saturday, or not Saturday, last week, we saw a truck with four on that was turning the corner.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, good move.
Thank you, Chair McClure. Thank you, Michelle, for coming. It is a real pleasure for me to be sitting on the board for this term of council of Headwaters Tourism, as well sitting on the Bolton BAA. It really takes it from that mid-level and right down to the local level. So I am hoping and expecting good progress to come forward. I think part of the problem could be, as you talked about in your presentation, just lost opportunities. There is a framework here, but you kind of get it, jump on that train and go for the ride. And I think there's opportunities, and that's low-hanging fruit that we can latch on to. And I hope to do just that. But going towards, and you talked about how the whole attitude of tourism is shifting. And to me, that's key. And it touches on Councillor Befford's comments about local issues in the tourism conversation, and I remember when you and I sat down the first time. One of the things I strongly believe in is the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and we have the partners here in tourism, and Headwaters represents them, and I think that holistic, use that word a lot too, approach tourism creates better value than if we break it all apart, and because tourists don't stop at borders, they freely meander back and forth, and we need to have a vision and a process that manages tourism that reflects that. And so I was glad to see point four in your trends where you talked about that shift, because I think that's what it does. It says, what do tourists do? What do they want? What do they expect when they come to our community? And let's design our tourism around that, as opposed to just a stand with brochures, as you talked about. And I think that is the key for the next step, is it's going to be a different approach to how we deal with tourism. And I think it's going to require, and I think it's a positive thing, more interaction between your funding partners, and Town of Caledon being one, and Headwaters Tourism. And I think there needs to be a lot of back and forth where, as Councillor Befford says, we have an issue here. And then, put that to Headwaters Tourism as one of our the groups that we collaborate with, and then something comes back to the town,
yep.
and that makes an impact. I think historically the way it's worked is, you know, Headwaters Tourism or whatever group it might be, they just do their thing. I think there needs to be more engagement and impacts where we reflect what our issues might be and all your community partners, and then we get that information back and we implement something,
yep.
and it makes an impact. So I think that's the key in the shift of trend in tourism, and I think that's where we need to go. And so I'm glad you highlighted that.
Thank you. It's interesting. So the equine group, the more engagement any group has at the table, the more we have to pay attention to them. And I don't mean that we choose not to pay attention to other people, but in our staff, we have two of us. So we have limited capacity, but if we start to pull on our partners together in this, we start to pull on the successes and their expertise. And I, you know, Sandra Dolson from your Economic Development Department obviously sits on our board in an ex officio capacity, but also sits on our equine group. And we have representatives there from Economic Development in Dufferin County and King Township, because they're part of that equine initiative. So suddenly the whole is greater than the parts, and it's not just relying on myself and my colleague who are in our office, but that's where the real critical impact starts to hit the marketplace. And I think, I mean, it, and Councillor Beffert and the town has supported us through this change over the past 4 years. It's not easy when you make change, but I think now we're starting to see the results of it. It's hard slogging early, but I am really proud of the impact we've made on, and I'm not minimizing your contribution, but on relatively minimal dollars for an organization that has, I think, a fairly broad reach into the larger landscape. So thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Downey.
Thank you, through you, Chair. Thanks for coming today, Michelle. I appreciate your presentation, and I completely agree that the tourism is changing, and I believe strongly that the experience is now the product. It's not necessarily something tangible, but really it's what you're doing. And from that point, we have over 600 hectares of product that we need to market. We need to market it collectively. I guess really the question that Councillor Beffert and I talk about is, how do we do that? How do we get there? And how do we cater and host our visitors to the best of our ability? I personally would like to see more of the kind of the infrastructure that supports, and I'm not talking about roads, but I'm talking about amenities in terms of washroom facilities, places where cyclists can put their bikes, all of those types of things in each of our little hamlets. You know, we've hit the horse country. We've got it. Thank you very much. Pan Am's fantastic. And now you're moving into the soft adventure. So on the west side of things, Councillor Shaughnessy, Councillor Beffert, McClure, and I have all these beautiful little hamlets that are being inundated by visitors, you know, every weekend. And we need to host them, and we need to host them well so that our businesses can flourish. So I definitely would be looking to you for some answers to those questions and how we do that, how we go about doing that, and how we do it well.
Tourism development and product development requires all of those pieces. So that first slide I did about the crowded tourism landscape, the reality is there's a lot of people touching tourism, but there's a lot of work that is required. So understanding that it's not just hanging a sign on a shingle to say we're open for business, but what infrastructure is required to do that. And I think the more we work together, and we have consciously, this past year, this Leading with the Best program that we implemented, you know, part of it was around resourcing, but it was also realizing that if we're putting a position out into the marketplace, some of our businesses, some of our communities may not be quite what we call market ready yet. They may not have washrooms, but if we've identified as part of the soft adventure tourism, we may say there's hiking and there's fishing and there's cycling. Okay, so we see the entire landscape, but we may not be able to do it all at once, but we know they all need washrooms. They all need wayfinding signage. So how are we going to put the infrastructure supports, Whose role is it? How do we collectively leverage funds for that? But then more importantly, do just because somebody's put a sign on their door saying they're open for business, is that enough? Or do we have a strategy? Let's pick our five winners first, who we're going to go to market with because we think they tell our best story, and then foster the next level of business so that they can start to see the value added of tourism. When we did our brand launch on May 7th, we then did a two-day media tour. And one of the places we went to was a farm market that was in Caledon. And I spoke to the farmer, and he probably would not mind me saying his name, but I won't hear. And I said, so how do you like being in the tourism business? And he goes, oh, I love it. The ladies brought in $400,000 of revenue last year on a fairly new business. And for us, that is the best. They're keeping with their core business. But tourism is a value-added business. And they've started to look at the next steps to nurture that business development. And that is part of the work we do. So we know we can't be all things to all people, but let's get those wins slowly and breed success so that the other people want to move up the channel. And I think, I don't want to say our equine work is done, but I think we've sort of done what we, it's got a steady foundation now, and now we're on to the next thing. And I believe that is our next priority is probably food and that soft adventure linked very closely together.
Is there any more questions? Well, thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
That's okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Next, I'd like to call Peggy Tollett for the 2014 audited financial statements.
Okay, so I'm going to go through the 2014 results for the town's year-end statements. It's a short presentation. I cut it down to two slides. So the first slide is really looking at the statement of financial position or the balance sheet. And the first pie chart is basically looking at our assets, what we own. The second pie chart is looking at our liabilities, what we owe. So in focusing on the first pie chart, we have relatively almost $60 million in cash or bank, $56 million in temporary investments. This is largely due to the amount of money we collect for development charges and that the work that town's been doing in collecting taxes in arrears. So we take every opportunity we can in investing our funds. We have a pretty detailed cash flow statement that we use that triggers when we have funds available that we can do investments on, and we do that on a regular basis. Our tax receivable is the lowest we've had in probably 3 years. We're at $9.3 million. So back in 2011, we were at 11% of the town's tax levy. We're now at just 6.9 or 7% of the tax levy. We've been proactively doing tax arrears collections, and also we have a special pre-authorized payment plan that we introduced in 2012, which we're now seeing the results of that over the last couple of years. Our accounts receivable is about $5 million. Lots of that is due to third-party billing for the Pan Am Equestrian Park. So we have our partners that we have to bill for the construction, and that's largely why that amount is higher than usual. Our long-term investments, about $27 million. And then our non-financial assets is $250 million. This is a reduction from previous years. In 2014, the town has transferred a large asset to the Region of Peel, the Bolton Arterial Route, the bar. Because of that, our assets have come down considerably, and details are available on the reports under RB2. The liability section is pretty straightforward. We have $20 million in accounts payables and accrued liabilities. The deferred revenue there is basically our development charges that we hold. And then the long-term liabilities is $17 million, which is made up of the three debts payments that we have. One is the hydro, the other is the bar, which will still show on our statements even though we transfer that to the region. It's our debt payments. The region will take over the payments, but we'll still show it on our books. And then the aerial. And then our overall net worth is made up of our tangible capital assets and our reserve fund balances, and of course any accumulated surplus that we have. The next chart, again, is pretty straightforward. We show two different pie charts. The first one focuses on the revenue or where the money comes from. And the second pie chart focuses on where the money is used for our expenses. So, of course, there's no surprise. The first chart, majority of our revenue that we collect is from taxation. So that makes up the majority of it. But then we also have our fees and user fees, our federal and provincial grants, licenses and permits, fines and penalties, other income, and development charges shows up here when we actually fund a project. We have to recognize that revenue, and that's when it shows up here. So overall, we have about $80 million in revenue. On the other pie chart, we have our expense section. And this is shown in not the traditional towns departments. This is shown based on the ministry's requirements of reporting. So general government makes up of corporate management, council, support departments such as corporate services, legal, and HR, or human resources. Protective services is more of fire, OPP services, and animal shelter. Transportation is obviously roads. Fleet winter maintenance is in there, and stormwater. And then we have our issue on our three debentures that we have. Recreation culture also includes parks and library. And then the last one being planning and development, which includes building and planning and policy, sorry. So overall, our expenses show about $73 million. So the annual surplus before the transfer to the region for the bar was around $2.8 million. That's full accrual accounting, which becomes part of the town's overall accumulated surplus. Basically, if you look through RB2, is in more details, and also there'll be our submission for our Government Finance Officers Association submission, which has a detailed statement and explanation of our management discussion letter for year-end 2014. And that concludes my presentation.
Jennifer Anderson, seconded by Councillor Bafford. That report, CS 2015-033, the audited financial statement be received, and that the corporation of the Town of Caledon consolidated financial statements for the year ended December 31st, 2014 be approved. Is everybody okay? All in favor of this? Anybody opposed? Motion's carried then. Okay, we'll start in our regular business now. Yeah. RB1. Moved by Councillor Downey, seconded by Councillor DeBoer. That report, CS 2015-030, regarding closed capital report for 2015 be received, and that the 48 capital projects listed in Appendix A to report CS 2015-030 be closed, and that the unaudited net capital surplus of $872,571 be transferred back to the original sources of funding, and that the Treasurer be authorized to reopen any closed project for technical adjustments requiring, including the payment of subsequent invoices, deficient work, or other payments related to a capital project, and to draw funds from original funding sources up to their budget surplus amount. Yes, sir. And there's an amendment to this, moved by Barb Shaughnessy, seconded by Councillor Bafford, that the following paragraph be added, that a new 2015 capital project be created in the amount of $58,000 for Caledon Village streetscaping to include lighting on Highway 10 funded by the tax-funded capital contingency reserve. Okay, Councillor Mazzapelli, you're up to talk about the amendment.
Thank you, Chair McClure. So speaking to the amendment, and I'm not saying that the request is not valid in any way, shape, or form, but and maybe I can just ask why it's being interjected here. Typically, these come through the budget process or a report through staff. We, in a good way, argue hours upon hours trying to vet out budgets. And to have something just pop up, I have no notice of this, no background on it. I am not, at this point, certainly willing to support something I have no knowledge of. If it was something that was on the radar, I would have expected it to come up in the budget process or through a staff report.
Councillor Shaughnessy, would you like to answer that?
And I'd like to give some background at the appropriate time.
Yeah, I'd like to know that too.
Okay, through you, Acting Mayor. So the report, when it was completed, this is staff's recommendation to close their certain projects. And if the project's complete, staff will recommend to close the project, and any funding goes back to the original sources of funding. This project in particular had some grant money that we received, so that's why we had some surplus. However, when the project's being done, we use the grant money first, so that reduces the town's portion, which is the tax portion, so that's why we have a little bit of money left. However, in speaking to the project manager of the project, the work that was required to be completed was completed. However, and I guess Councillor Bedford and Shaughnessy could speak to this, there were some additional requests that we knew were required to be done in that area, so that's why this amendment was brought forward.
Okay, so I want to make sure I understand this. And is this, and I understand there's funding, so that certainly speaks in favor of not letting it go. Do I understand you correctly that it was actually on the list of capital projects to be closed, and basically it's being reinserted through this amendment? So it will be on this list of closed capital projects?
So it is recommended to be closed. It's in the list. There, in the list, it shows that there's $58,000 left. The money was recommended to go back into the reserve. What is asked here is they want to do some additional work in that area, and they didn't want to wait until the budget process. They wanted to do it now. So they're asking for a new project to be set up and taking the money back out of the reserve.
Sorry, when you say they?
The two councillors that are requesting it.
So there's $58,000 left in the project?
Yes, but I just want to reiterate the work was completed, and it just happens to be $58,000. No different than you purchase a fire truck and it came under budget, the money goes back to the reserve. They're just asking, or the amendment's asking, to do additional work over and above the original scope.
Okay, now I understand. My second question, I guess, would be the Director of Public Works, as this is outside the scope of the capital project that we as council endorsed. And, you know, street lighting is always one of those things that's a nice thing to have. I understand that's what it is. Would you be able to provide comment? I want to make sure $58,000 is not a little amount, and I want to make sure I understand very clearly what this is before I vote for or against. Would you be able to provide your opinion as to the capital request?
Through you, Acting Mayor McClure. Councillor Mazzapelli, the original scope of this project was not to have power to those poles in Caledon Village. It was to provide poles that were banner poles only. At the request of the community, they asked if power could be brought to some of the poles that were being installed as part of this project. And because the access to power for those poles were easy, it was accommodated. There are still, I think, three poles that do not have power. And so this request is to take a look at hooking up power to those remaining three poles. Having said that, the three poles that we're discussing on are not on town property. They're along Highway 10 and will require boring under Charleston Road potentially to bring wire and power to there to connect it. We have not had the opportunity, to answer your question, we have not had the opportunity to do a detailed analysis of what this would cost.
Okay, that was my other question. So $58,000 is just what's left in that capital project. That's not to suggest that it's enough or maybe it is, but we don't know whether that's enough to fully fund the project, correct?
That's correct. We have not done the detailed work or analysis to figure out what the total cost of this project would be.
So my personal request or suggestion, I'm not against it, would be that we undertake the exercise of understanding what that cost would be, and then a report come back to council to make that. I'm not looking at opening up the door and then a request comes at some point for two, three, or four times the amount to actually get the job done. This gives me no indication of what it'll actually cost. So I am supportive philosophically, but we need to see the number before I would be willing to vote in favor of allocating the funds. So is that how, am I understanding that's how this will happen?
I'm not sure. Could you explain that?
Through Acting Mayor McClure to Councillor Mezzapelli, procedurally, there's two paths that you can choose. One is to vote down this amendment and place another amendment on the floor to request that. Or you could refer this item to just this paragraph to staff for whichever you're requesting. And then council vote on the original motion.
I would at first offer to my Ward 1 colleagues, I believe that is the prudent thing to do. We all need to know what this will cost. I don't agree with just making a pledge without knowing what it'll cost. So I would offer it to them first to do that. If that's not the case, then that's something I would be willing to do.
Okay, well, one of some other questions. Councillor Befford?
Yes, I'd like the opportunity just to help Councillor Mezzapelli and Council to understand what we're doing here. You know, we've talked a lot about Caledon Village and what the division has created by widening Highway 10. And at the time, rather than MTO and the Region Appeal and so on doing different aspects of the beautification, we called it streetscaping, a fund was created, and the local village association created a plan. And that plan has allowed them, to the best of their ability, to create a village aspect in Caledon Village. If you go there now and you see the parquet on the northwest corner with lighting, and you see that there's also a parquet on the southwest corner. That southwest corner, by the way, was paid for by Tim Hortons. I went directly to them and asked if they would support us while they were preparing. What's happened is that on the first aspect of it, there was an additional amount set aside by the village for lighting. That lighting isn't included right now on both the southwest and the northeast corners. However, I've spoken with the owners of both facilities, the Petro-Canada and the Tim Hortons. Tim Hortons doesn't own it, they lease it, but the owner, Dominic Finelli, are both willing to support us with in terms of the power. And in order to prepare for that, when the concrete was laid, conduits were put in. So in terms of the amount, we strongly believe, after talking to Hogg and Nevels and in looking at the aspects that have to be done, which would just simply add to what's already there, that this project can be done for $58,000. And I wouldn't support any more than that. But the bottom line is the money's there. These people have tried their best to create a village atmosphere, which we can't do the same as we can in some other villages like Inglewood and Alton, because it's got this huge highway. And so what they need is the opportunity to finish, at least so that it finishes it off. And they believe that, and I've got the whole listing, which was from the MTO, the Region Appeal. We even took some money from the tennis courts that was left over at the last time we transferred funds. Rather than losing this money, we believe that it was there for this purpose, and we'd like to finish it for that purpose. And we believe very strongly that the amount is sufficient to move ahead. In fact, people like Hogg and Neville are even willing to donate some time and material to make it happen. So rather than getting caught in a council vote, we would like simply to continue to move ahead with the plans that we've already made.
Okay. Councillor Groves, next.
Thank you. Through you. It sounds to me like the councillors of Ward 1 has done a lot of work, a lot of research, and certainly has the support of the community and community partners to make this happen. All of the villages are looking to have that village-type atmosphere, and whether it's banners or flowers or lighting, that sort of thing, it is important to create that village-type atmosphere. It is unfortunate that Highway 10, the way that it's been constructed through there, it has, in my opinion, has destroyed that village. It is, and certainly this has been a problem for the residents in that area for a number of years. MTO and the Ward 1 councillors can correct me if I'm wrong, but in all the discussions we've had over the years, MTO has not been very cooperative with the village, with the residents there, in terms of making that, helping them in their requests and in their efforts. So this has been a long discussion, and it's been a discussion over the years with the folks in Caledon Village. And I think they've done a pretty good job at the committee that they've organized and the work that they've done there. And certainly, Councillor Beffert, to you and Councillor Shaughnessy, I'm sure that you will continue to reach out to the partners in the community to make sure that this project is done, and is done in a financially sustainable way, so that there are no surprises to us here in terms of the dollar amount that comes back. And certainly it's nice to hear that there are community partners that are willing to do this and step up to the plate. So, you know, I know in downtown Bolton, one of the things that we have that works for us, and you don't have it and the other villages don't have it, is that we have the special BIA levy that helps us to beautify our downtown core, but you don't have that. So I think it's important that you create that village type, and I know the residents have been asking for some help for a long time. So I don't have any problems in supporting you and Councillor Shaughnessy in moving this forward.
Okay, Councillor DeBoer.
Yeah, I guess the question is we're not really setting a precedent here, because we're looking at the amount of money that's left over in the capital project anyways.
Well, in some respects you are, because if it was a project, like I said, for a fire truck, if they finish it and there's money left over, fire would more than lovely want to spend more on a different part of the scope of the project, but they have to return, the process is to return the money back. However, if council chooses that they want to do this, they can do that. I just want to make sure that staff have an opportunity to make sure that that is enough money.
Yeah, and I think that's important, to make sure that that is enough money to do the job. But that's exactly the road I didn't want to go down, because when you do look at it, there was money left over in the fire. Johnson Sports Park had $18,000 left over, and we're nowhere near having the work completed there. And I don't think we need to or should be starting to get into the habit of because the budget is set, then we start looking for other ways to spend it and do that on a regular basis. I think that I think we need to look at the way Caledon Village and the way everything transpired up there, with everything that's gone on, that this is maybe a one-off, a unique situation, and hope that we look at it as being that. Because, yeah, you rely on the budget items that are under budget to cover off the ones that are over budget. And if we start taking the ones that are over budget and then just putting them in somewhere, then we're forever going to be under. Oh no, if we keep taking the ones that are under budget and adding to it, then we'll be forever adding money into the budget, because the only ones that won't, because when they come in short or they come spend where it costs us more, we don't stop them either. So long as I think it's fully understood that this is a unique situation, and that's the way that we act or look at it, then I don't have a problem with this.
Okay, Councillor Mespelli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor McClure. I just want to make sure I relay my intentions very clearly, particularly to the Ward 1 councillors. I am not opposed to this. I believe in doing something and doing it right for the betterment of the community. I want to be clear about that. The only two points of caution I have is that this council needs to be assured, and this is probably an unfair example to make, but I think it gets the gist of what I'm trying to say. I don't want this to be, you know, another example of a project that, you know, how deep does the rabbit hole go? And if there was wording that it was, if it's very clearly felt that 58,000 will be plenty to do this, I would be pleased to see an upset limit of $58,000 to undertake the work. The second and most important point I want to make is when we do capital projects, and I know staff work all summer long to put these together, and sometimes things pop up. I get that. And maybe that's exactly what this is. But we need to make sure that we have comprehensive capital projects that do what's intended to be done to the fullest extent of what needs to be done. Because we don't want to go down a road where when we look at, oh, there's money left over, let's add on to, right? So if lighting should have been there, it should have been there from the get-go. And I think that's something important as counselors, as staff, humbly, I would submit, that let's get it done right. And if it's going to cost a little bit more, then so be it. But let's not do it in phases, unless it's intended to, but to get it done right the first time. So I'm supportive of this, up to $58,000, and I would appreciate it if that could be put in the language, an upset limit of $58,000. And again, my second point, very clearly I want to communicate that when we do a capital project, we need to make sure we've caught everything to the best of our abilities, understanding there's times when stuff happens. I get that. But I'm just cautious. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Beffords next.
Well, two things. With Councillor Shaughnessy's approval, I would be prepared to insert that a new 2015 capital project not to exceed $58,000 for Caledon Village, because I'm very, very clear that's the absolute upside of it. And so are the residents, by the way. And the other part of it is Councillor Mezzapelli is absolutely correct. This should have been, right from the beginning, established as part of the project. But we were hung out to dry by MTO. Before we even knew it, they decided that they wouldn't do anything. They'd give us a lump sum of money, and you look after it. And for some reason at the town, it wasn't David Loveridge. It was whoever was here at the time, accepted that offer. Right off the bat, we knew it wasn't enough money. We've struggled to do what we've done. And that's with a lot of support from the community. And so we've had money. You can look at it another way. We got money from MTO, the Region Appeal, and the Town of Caledon, and matching grants. We could say that it was that part of the money that we didn't spend, so we'd just like to keep it over and spend it. But you're absolutely right. We should never, ever enter into that kind of a deal again. We should make sure that what's going to happen, the money's there for it to happen.
Peggy, do you need an amendment for this?
I'm sorry. So the idea is, do you want to say it so it's $58,000 and not exceed that amount? My only concern is when Public Works goes to tender it out, if it comes in over, they'll have to bring back another report to let you know.
Well, so be it. Okay. That's what the Village Association believes that is there for them, the $58,000.
Okay. We'll have to make that amendment then. And in the meantime, Barb... Councillor Shaughnessy, I shouldn't call you Barb.
Thank you. Thank you. Just wanted to clarify to council and those staff members here that the Caledon Village Association believed that was always included in the, but when the drawings were done, it was missed, and most people don't understand reading drawings, and it didn't get put on the drawings, but it was definitely articulated by those in charge that those lights would be included once the construction was actually completed on those corners, because it's Tim Hortons and it was a friggin' mess there, and it has been for years. So for them, the Caledon Village Association, it was always part of the deal. It just didn't get put on the drawing. So I just wanted you'd understand that it was not an extra in their eyes. It's merely an extra because it was not put on the drawings. Thank you.
Okay, I think we're getting an amendment coming here, so we'll just have to hold on. Okay, this is the amendment to the amendment, that the words "to the upset limit" be added before the $58,000. Okay, we'll have a recorded vote. All those in favor of this?
Thank you, through you. So a recorded vote's been called on the amendment to the amendment, and I see everyone present is in favor.
Okay, thank you. Okay, and now we'll vote on the amendment as amended. All in favor of that? No, just hands up. No, it's carrying. Okay, and we're going to have another vote on the main motion as amended. All in favor of this? Two hands over there. Okay. This is passing too. Okay, well, we go to RB2 next. RB3. Okay. We've already done RB2. I didn't know that. Okay, it's moved by Councillor Bedford, seconded by Councillor Mezzapelli. Okay, I'll read it. It's recommended that report CS 2015-027 regarding Municipal Performance Measurement Program, MPMP, report for 2014 be received. Is there any questions on this? Okay, Councillor Mezzapelli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor McClure. I just wanted, I know it's not a question, sorry, Carrie, but I think it's extremely worthy of note. If you look at Schedule A of the report, the building permits and inspections page, when I look at 2013 to 14 comparisons, in every way, 2014 had more building permits in every category and applications in every category, and yet the amount of time to process them is down in every category. So this is something that this council has strongly asked for, and here on paper we're seeing it. So I would like to very much thank you, staff, for delivering. I think council needs to recognize this. And I just wanted to take a moment to do that. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Well, let's take the vote then. All in favor of this? Okay, it's passing. Everybody's... Well, we'll move on to RB4. It's... Okay, it's moved by Annette Groves and second by Jeff Rannis, that reported CS 2015-024 regarding year-end actual budget operating variance be received. That $273,000 of the $463,000 operating surplus for 2014 be transferred to the winter maintenance reserve, and that $690,000 be transferred from the operating budget to development charge reserve funds to pay for discounts provided to developers as part of the 2014 bylaw phase in the residential DC rate, and that the $690,000 transfer to the development charge reserve fund be funded as follows. $190,496 balance to 2014 operating surplus, B, $100,000 from the development charge exemption and discount reserve, and C, $399,504 from the operating contingency reserve. All those in favor of this? Request, Rob, would you like to comment on this?
Yes, thank you, Acting Mayor McClure. Supportive of the report and the recommendation. Just two quick questions. Ms. Tollett, if I could, do we know the stat? I keep asking this, but the funds that we were receiving or hope to receive from the government, the balance of the $780,000, do we know the status of that?
Through you, Acting Mayor, they're in the final review of our claim. They had a couple questions. We went back and forth with them the last month or so. I'm hoping we'll hear back soon. So to date, we've only received 273 of the $800,000 claim.
Okay, and fully I recognize that we drew a lot of money out of that winter reserve beyond what we normally would utilize in a year, so it is good financial planning to put that back.
Right.
I do know another result, and I know I keep saying this and I want to say it again, another result of that ice storm was a large reduction in our tree canopy, and I see it every day, and residents are commenting on it. And whether it's Emerald Ash Borer or the ice storm or a combination thereof, my hope is, whether it's through this or through some other source of funding, that we really look at having an aggressive tree planting program year over year, because its effects are clearly visible in our community. The second is on RB... There's no RB. Page 10 of the report, of B6, Other Expenses... A very large unfavorable variance was to the tune of $1.1 million was the supplemental insurance assessment. Not really clear what that was. I was just wondering if you'd, Cole's notes, be able to give me an understanding.
Sure. Senior Mayor, or Acting Mayor McClure, so the way this works is every, 5 years, we get an assessment and a supplementary to, it's all municipalities get affected by it, and it's additional, insurance charge that they... charged us in 1 year that we end up paying over 5 years term. So the last time this was done was back in 2009, I believe, where they do an assessment and it's like a supplementary bill and you get a large bill all at once. And it's kind of, it doesn't just affect the town, it affects all municipalities that's within OMAX that we are insured with.
So does it in any way mean we're under budgeting what our insurance costs would be? Or is this an exercise that every 4 or 5 years is invariably going to lead to an unfair favorable variance like this?
It's over and above our regular insurance, and it's something that we plan for. So we have a reserve that we set up for insurance, and in a given year, if we have a surplus, we actually put that money into the reserve. And then in a given year for this, and when the 5 years come up, we can always draw from the reserve for this. For this year, we're using the actual surplus within the variance of the 2014 to fund this initiative.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Is there, will we vote on this then? RB2, are all in favor? Yep, they're all in favor. Motion's carried. Okay, we're going to RB5 now. It's just it here. Moved by, who's this? Jennifer Ennis.
Yep.
Seconded by Joanna Downey. That report CS 2015-025 regarding the Treasurer's Investment Report for 2014 be received. Any questions on this? All those in favor of this, then? It's carried. Okay, that was the easiest one. Here we get RB6. Moved by Joanna Downey, seconded by Doug Bedford, that audited reserves and reserve fund balance for 2014 recommended that report CS 2015-026 regarding audited reserves and reserve fund balances for 2014 be received. Questions? All those in favor? Passing. Okay, we get RB7 now. Okay. Okay, moved by Annette Grove, seconded by Jennifer Ennis. That report CS 2015-029 regarding development reserve fund balance for 2014 be received, and that the Treasurer forward a copy of CS 2015-029 to the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing in accordance with the Development Charge Act 1997. Questions? Peggy?
Sorry, through you, Acting Mayor, I just want to point out on Schedule C of this report, there's a small typo, and I think that we've already circulated out the revised one. The second chart on the bottom of Schedule C, it should say service areas, parks, not service area roads and related. Okay.
Okay, thank you. We'll have the vote on this now. All in favor? They're all in favor. Motion carries. RB8. Okay, moved by Councillor DeBoer, seconded by Councillor Mazzapelli. Read off this. That report CS 2015-032 regarding 2014 leasing agreement summary received. That pursuant to the leasing policy in the purchasing bylaw 2013-107, Council accepts and agrees with the option of the Treasurer that the total amount of all financial leasing of the following categories already entered into 2004 remaining active in 2015 or proposed to be entered into in 2015 have not and will not result in a material impact for the municipality. A, leases for office equipment including photocopiers, multifunctional printers, which have been entered into in accordance with the town's purchasing policy, and B, leases of real property where the lease is nominal, taken token consideration, or consideration that does not exceed the materiality level of the audited financial statements. Any questions? Councilor Bafford.
Yes, under the executive summary, it comments on two property leases. Could I ask what those two leases are?
Through you, Acting Mayor, they are the Dufferin Courts in Orangeville, and the OPP has also a location there as well.
Okay, so that's not our location here. That's part of our building, but the one up in Orangeville, we
correct.
Lease.
Correct.
Okay, from the town of Orangeville or?
From Dufferin.
From Dufferin, okay, thank you.
Questions? We'll have the vote now. All those in favor? Hey, get hands up. All those in favor? Yep, they're in favor. Motion carries. RB9. Okay, moved by Councillor Ennis and second to Councillor Gross. The rating isn't very good here. That report ADM-2015-044 regarding municipal significance designation for special occasion liquor permit. The Chutney Festival event be received and that the Chutney Festival be held July 11, 2015 at the Brampton Fairgrounds in Caledon be designated as a municipal significant event for the purposes of obtaining a special occasion permit from the Alcohol and Gaming Commission at Ontario AGCO. Councillor DeBoer, you have a question?
Yeah, just a question. We probably ran through this before, but does this have to come to council, or can we have staff delegate that they can just approve these to a set of criteria?
Through Acting Mayor McClure to Councillor DeBoer. I believe last year or the year before, a report came to Council and you provided delegated authority for existing events within the town of Caledon. However, the AGCO does require a municipal resolution, so any new events or any significant events do come to Council for their consideration.
Okay, so we won't see this one again, but if there's a new event in the future, we will see it.
That is correct.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, we'll have the vote on this then. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay, we're moving right along here. Okay. I think they got dinner, so we got to get. Okay, moved by Councillor Shaughnessy, seconded by Annette Groves. I think that's her. That's Councillor Ennis. I can't read your writing. that report DP 2015-023 regarding street naming policy be received, and that the Caledon street naming policy attached as Schedule A to report DP 2015-023 be approved. Councillor Mazzapelli, question.
Thank you, Acting Mayor McClure. Just a tiny thing caught my eye, so I thought I'd mention it. In the policy section of the report that talks about the guidelines as to what's acceptable and what's not, they talk about not naming streets based on ethnic, racial, or religious affiliations. The following page talks about the clarification of use of prefixes in Section 3, and the last one is Saint. And I was just wondering, is that at all contradicting the policy, or is that deemed to be a religious?
Through you, Acting Mayor McClure, to Councillor Mazzapelli. I would not take it that way. I would say that in the case of the prefix, there are street names that do have saints, so they just wanted to make sure, as a result of those street names having saint, that they're consistent. So that's why it's in that part of the policy. Because we already have existing names
that
have
streets.
So this
is to deal with existing.
I would think that would be the prefix of it.
Okay. Thanks.
Any more questions? We'll have the vote. Okay, all those in favor? Yeah, they are. Motion carries. Okay, RB 11. Moved by Councillor Downey, seconded by Councillor Befford. That report, DP 2015-047, regarding heritage designation bylaw amendment for 19134 here Ontario Street, be received, and that bylaw be enacted to amend heritage designation bylaw 2009-087 for 167, sorry, for 19134 here Ontario Street, to reflect the property's new legal description pursuant to section 30.1 of the Ontario Heritage Act, and to satisfy conditional approval of the Committee of Adjustment Consent Decision PO24-14. Questions? Councillor Befford?
Yes, I'd just like to recognize Jane Pitfield, who's in the audience and who's very close to this property, and thank her for the work that she's done in upgrading it in a heritage fashion. It's much appreciated, and this certainly helps with what she's planning to do with the property.
Thank you. We'll have the vote on this then. In favor? It's carried. Okay, well, we'll go on to RB 12. Moved by Annette Groves, seconded by Councillor Befford. That report DP 2015-048 regarding recommendations for allocation of designated heritage property grant funding for spring 2015 be received, and that grants for 13 designated heritage properties as outlined on Schedule A of the report DP 2015-048 be approved, and that the grants be funded from the Designated Heritage Property Grant Program for $45,447 from the Development Approvals and Planning Policy 2015 Operating Budget. Questions on this? Councillor Groves first.
Through you, Acting Mayor, to the clerk, I know I moved this report, but I would like to amend the report to ask that the full amount be included, that, as opposed to the 45,447 to the 50,000, because we do have a property in Bolton, and we've been discussing that property. It does have a heritage designation on it, and as a result of some issues with our storm drains, they have had a lot of damages to the property. So if I can amend that to include it, that it includes the 50,000, the whole amount.
Through you, Acting Mayor McClure, so I'm clear, are you wanting to add additional funds to a specific project on Schedule A, or is it a new project? I don't have the schedule in front of me.
Is it number six?
It's number six.
No, it is number six.
On the current?
Yes.
So you want to increase the amount?
Yes.
Okay. It will require an amendment, so I'll work with you, and just if you give me just a minute, Acting Chair.
Okay, go ahead. Okay, we'll work on that amendment. Okay, Councillor Mezzapelli will second that. In the meantime, would you like to speak to this, Doug? Councillor Befford? Or we're going to wait? Okay, here we go. That Schedule A be amended to add $4,553 to the project. Joseph Watson House, located on 45 Nancy Street, for a total of $8,553. Moved by Councillor Groves, seconded by Rob Mezzapelli. Okay, some more questions? I think there's another. Doug Barnes would like to comment on.
I'd like to speak to the amendment. I would ask a question of the Development Approvals Branch Heritage Officer. It says in the document that the total eligible cost on this project is only $4,000. So if the eligible cost for grant is only $4,000, how can we offer $8,553 on this project?
That's a good question.
Are you Acting Mayor McClure? The maximum grants per grant is $4,000. We do allow through the program guidelines two grants of a maximum of $4,000 in one calendar year, and I believe that is perhaps what Councillor Groves is looking to address. What is being proposed is above the maximum grant of $4,000 per grant, and so, but I'm sure it's at Council's discretion as to how they use the remainder of those funds.
Do we have to amend the policy for allowing this exception? Because now, if you allow a second grant this year, you're still $553 over the eligible grants.
You may have to include something in the resolution to address the fact that it's against the program guidelines.
Through Acting Mayor McClure, thank you. This would require a change to the motion, so perhaps procedurally the mover may want to withdraw it or change it so it is correct, and I would recommend that the amendment say that it is an exception to the policy, so the actual policy doesn't have to be amended. Okay, so if you give me just a few minutes, Councillor McClure.
Okay, start. Start again? We'll have a little map.
It was dry until 3 weeks ago. Then it rains every other day, as you say. I thought it was yesterday. Three, the middle of the day started raining. It rained good. Something to play with. Pretty close.
Okay, Councillor Gross, would you like to withdraw the First Amendment?
Yes, I would.
Okay, with the provision of council, is that all right? Okay, we got the new one here. Okay. That Schedule A be amended to add a second annual grant in the amount of $4,000 for the Joseph Olsatson House Project located at 45 Nancy Street, Bolton, as per the program guidelines. Are we okay with this? We call the vote. Is this okay? Who's in favor? Okay, this is going to go. The main motion is amended. I'll read this. Okay, I'll have the vote on this main motion then. All those in favor? Yep, they're in favor. Okay, another question. I just got the word that the lunch is hot. Do we want to keep going, or what do you want to do? Do you want to take a break, or keep going? Okay, we're going to do one more, then we're going to have a lunch break. RB 13, is it? We're done here. Done. I'd like to finish, but okay then. Moved by Councillor Mazzapelli, seconded by Annette Groves, that report DP 2015-051 regarding request to demolish or remove and relocate structures on a listed non-designated heritage property at 13450 Caledon King Town Line be received, and that the proposed demolition and or removal and relocation of the identified Bolton camp structure at 13450 Caledon King Town Line South as submitted by the Toronto Region Conservation Authority be approved. Questions on this? Anybody in favor? All in favor of this? Motion's carried. Okay, we're going to break to one. Okay, it's RB 14. It's moved by Rob Mazzapelli, seconded by Annette Groves, I think.
Yeah,
that report PREC 2015-010 regarding North Hill Park Picnic Shelter Memorial of Understanding be received, and that the mayor and clerk be authorized to evacuate, to execute a memorandum of understanding with the Rotary Club of Bolton, Ontario, Canada for the club's donation for the installation of a picnic shelter within the park known as the North Hill Park in Bolton, and that the funds from the council-approved capital project 15-111 Bolton Rotary Kinsman Graves Picnic Shelter be utilized as the town's $20,000 financial contribution towards the Rotary Club of Bolton's $65,000 picnic shelter project. Any questions? All those in favor of this? Okay, it's passing. This is the same one. Okay, this is RB 15. It's RB 15, moved by Councillor DeBoer, seconded by Joanna Downey, that report PW 2015-041 regarding electric vehicle bylaw enforcement be received, and that capital project 14-077-pickup replacement be amended to purchase 3 2016 General Motors GM Bolt electric vehicles through a competitive bidding process for use by bylaw and regulatory services within the existing budget of $90,000. and that the standardization of GM Volt electric vehicles be approved as the town's fleet standard for the next 2 years, till June 16th, 2017. All those in favor? Councilor DeBoer.
Guess my question is how, by specifying General Motors Volt, how are you able to have it as a competitive bid, knowing that other manufacturers do have similar vehicles in the hybrid electric models?
That's a good question.
Through you, Acting Mayor McClure, Councillor DeBoer, we took a look at a number of the other vehicles are out there, specifically in the electric, where we would be in a position to use electric most of the time as our fuel source. And the only vehicle that we could find at this point that met our requirements, given the distances that a lot of our bylaw and enforcement and parking officers have to travel, was the Volt at this point. So that's why we've asked for a standardization for the fleet for the next 2 years. And then we'll continue to look at other options that are coming down. The advantage of the Volt, as you're maybe aware, is the fact that it has the ability to regenerate itself, and a lot of the other vehicles don't.
Okay, so as far as when you talk about standardization, does that mean that we're going to be adding to the fleet this specific model for the next 2 years? Or because I think the bylaw enforcement probably only ever has three vehicles, and the lifespan would be like 4 years on these, probably, right?
We have two more vehicles currently. We have two other Toyota Camry hybrids that are in the fleet at this time. We're anticipating that those will be replaced within the next year or so. One of those may become a Volt. The other one will become some sort of hybrid SUV, given the current plans as it sits today.
Okay, thank you.
I got a question. What's the range of one of these vehicles?
From an electric perspective, their range is about 200 kilometers, I range, but they also have an onboard electric gas engine that kicks in that helps propel the vehicle or fuel the vehicle itself. It also helps regenerate the batteries during that period of time. So it has a significant range in the sense of as long as the fuel in the tank lasts, and the battery. So we've taken a look at what we expect our average range for a typical patrol day for our vehicles, and that vehicle meets all of those requirements.
Okay, Councillor Bedford.
Yeah, I understand that this is progress and that, you know, this kind of vehicle will ultimately probably be for all of us. I guess my thinking is it premature? We seem to be making a decision which would preclude other members of our community from bidding if their companies don't make that kind of a vehicle. Is that an issue we should be concerned about?
Through you, Acting Mayor McClure, Councillor Beffert, we've spent almost 6 months at this point going over all of the various combinations for the bylaw and enforcement vehicles. We'd looked at the option of going pure electric. We looked at all sorts of various options. In the short term, we figured that this is the best option. I'm a very open and transparent contracting kind of person in the sense of I want the entire market to play. But what I didn't want to get into is get into an electric vehicle, for example, the Smart Electric or other vehicles that had ranges of 60 and 80 kilometers, which just didn't meet our operational need, even though it made our environmental goals. So this is sort of a short term, gets us into the game, gets us started down that route, allows us to evaluate how well electric works, and it does meet our operational range requirements, which are, again, given the size of Caledon, are significant for other electric vehicles to meet.
So at the same time, are we able to clarify what it's going to cost us hydro-wise? I mean, it would seem to me that, you know, in today's market, hydro is expensive. So do we have information that says that even though we're going to go this route, it's going to be less than, say, going gas route?
Through Acting Mayor McClure, that's correct. We've done some initial calculations. We are putting, as you know, we approved the electric charging station here at Town Hall at the last council meeting. Part of that electric charging station is the ability for us to meter and know how much we are using and what the actual cost is. And again, it's part of this shift with these vehicles is we're not just buying these and then forgetting about it. We're going to use it as a project for us to analyze how well electric works for us.
Okay, we'll have the vote. All those in favor? Motion carried. We're on to RB16. I think this is the last one, is it? Okay, then. Moved by Annette Groves, Councillor Annette Groves, seconded by Doug Baffert, that report PW-2015-042 regarding additional funding requests for capital project 15-094, bridge design and environment assessment received, and that capital project 15-094 bridge design and environment assessment be increased from $119,364 to $622,664, and that the budget's shortfall in the amount of $503,300 be funded from savings from project 15-132 bridge program as outlined in Table 3 of Report PW-2015-042. Questions? One question, Doug Baffert.
Yeah, I support this, but I guess my question is, we all know that most of these bridges were built at the same time after the war with government money. Do we have any indication that the government's going to step up to the plate here and provide some funding for these bridges through your associations and so on, David?
Through you, Acting Mayor McClure, I mean, every grant program that comes forward between Mr. Fuing and our staff, we look at every possible grant. We apply wherever it's possible for these grant funding. Every time we apply for a bridge one, we seem to get denied, and we've done that on a number of occasions. It appears at this point that we need to plan based on our own budget to try and rehabilitate our bridge structures, which you know are in serious need of work. But we'll continue from a staff perspective to look at all possible grants that are available.
Well, with that in mind, I wouldn't mind recommending or putting on the floor a motion that this council, through the mayor's office, write a letter to our federal and provincial leaders explaining that we need some help here and that we would really like them to look at the possibility of providing some grant money for us to repair what was originally provided by either the provincial or the federal government.
Through you, your acting mayor, to Councillor Baffert, might I suggest working with me on a notice of motion for a future meeting?
I will do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll call the vote on this. Is all those in favor of this? Okay, it's carried. Is there any announcements? Okay, go ahead. I'll start at the far end. Councillor Shaughnessy, any announcements? Councillor Mezzapelli?
Thank you, Acting Mayor McClure. Just two quick ones. June 18th, Bolton will be having its town hall meeting where we're going to be talking about issues locally and within the town. So encourage residents to come out June 18th. That's 7 to 9 p.m. at Rotary Place, the Senior Center. June 22nd, there will be a meeting at the Albion Bolton Union Community Center for the Bolton Transportation Master Plan, and that's from 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. Thank you.
So the first announcement is I just want to remind everybody about Canada Day celebrations taking place at Albion Hills. on July 1st from 4 to 11 p.m. There's live music, kids activities, dog show, and much, much more, followed by the fireworks at dusk, which is always a great event. And it's a free family event, so if you are looking for something to do on Canada Day, it's always a good time. My other one is, it's not so much as an announcement, and I hope that staff will, or that council will allow me to just briefly mention a special thanks to our staff, as well as the countless community volunteers. I'm not going to list all of them, because apparently there's over 65, with regards to the huge success of Caledon Day. Special thanks to Heather Savage and Aaron Berger, who helped to deliver the event, and to acknowledge also the Torch Relay team, because it was quite spectacular. If you were here and you saw it, there was far more people than we've ever had at any of our Caledon Day events, and there was a true sense of community pride, especially having Peter Holland bring in the torch. It was quite spectacular. And a fun fact, TO 2015 indicated that not only was Caledon Day Torch the highest attended relay so far, but its attendance at the celebration sites also tipped the numbers. So that's a big kudos to Caledon, and just goes to show how engaged our residents actually are. So special thanks to your team, Laura, for organizing that, and also the community volunteers.
Thank you. Councillor Groves.
Councillor Mazzapelli took the first two I had. And there was another one that I wanted to. We have a group of residents who, musicians, that have come together, and they gather at the Bolton United Church, and they perform, and it's sort of like a cafe style. With the closing of the Archtop Cafe, these musicians felt that it was important that they keep this going and they keep the group together. So they meet at the Bolton United Church. They will be meeting this Friday night. They start at 7:30. They have a really great musician, Deidre, and I can't remember her last name, but they are local artists, local musicians, and they are there, and it's a really nice event. So if you're not doing anything on Friday night and you want to pop over, please do so.
Councillor DeBoer? Councillor Baffert?
Not to be outdone, remember July 1st, there's a Canada Day celebration at the Caledon Agricultural Fairgrounds. It's free, and if you stick around long enough, you can go to the Knox United Church for a strawberry supper at night. So you can have breakfast at the fairgrounds, and you can have dinner at the church. And so everybody's welcome. And I, too, would like to give my accolades. I just spent my time on Saturday in the areas in Ward 1 of Inglewood and Alton and Caledon Village, and the turnout was spectacular, and the staff, whether it be from the Torch Relay or our own staff, were absolutely terrific. It was just a great, great day, and thanks to all the partners that helped out as well. I know Jim Dick and his old fire truck. I had a bell in one ear and a siren in the other, and by the end of the day, it was tough, I'll tell you. But a really good time was had by all, and I think it was one of the best community days. I didn't see the one here, but the best community days that I can remember in Ward 1, and people were just... And you know what I noticed most of all, and I think we need to remember it when we look at our future development, there were a lot of young people and a lot of young children, and it was great. Thanks.
Thanks. And I thought Joanna Downey would have brought it up. On Canada Day, the Downies are having a Canada Day celebration, and this Saturday night,
kind of peculiar interest.
And this Saturday night, I'm having a pig roast, so everybody's invited. And
it is a bit of a conflict, but I will mention that this Thursday, the 18th, is Mayfield United Church Chicken Barbecue at the Brampton Fairgrounds. I have tickets if anybody wants them, so I will prop my church.
Okay. Do you
want
to go and see, ask if there's any urgent business?
They're small.
Is there any urgent business? Nothing? This is urgent business. It's moved by, who's that? Councillor Groves, seconded by Barbara Shaughnessy, that a motion without notice be introduced as urgent business regarding the ministerial zoning order that is currently under appeal by the Ontario Municipal Board. Any comments on that? Okay.
Hold on. That's just an announcement. Okay, can we have a vote on this? All in favor of this? I read the damn thing. That a motion without notice be introduced as urgent business regarding the ministerial zoning order that is currently under appeal to the Ontario Municipal Board.
Could I clarify something before you vote on that particular comment? Is that it hasn't been appealed, it's been referred to the Ontario Municipal Board. Okay, so then. I would like that clarified, please. Okay. There is a difference.
Okay, maybe I shouldn't be reading the thing then. I was just handed it. Okay. Anything else? Councillor Bedford?
Well, I don't know where this is now, but my question is this not something that we would be discussing tomorrow? No? So tomorrow's council meeting has nothing to do with this? Oh, it's a surprise.
What time is it?
Okay, thanks.
Through Acting Mayor McClure to council, so in order procedurally, in accordance to the procedural bylaw, in order to present any urgent business, a motion needs to come forward, recognizing that it's urgent. So before you see the motion or hear the motion, you need to vote on whether or not you want to listen to the motion. So that's what this motion is doing. Okay, do you want to take the vote?
So are we going to take a vote on this? All those in favor of listening to this? I think I'll get the cross up. Moved by Councillor Groves, seconded by Councillor Shaughnessy. Whereas the Ontario Building Code Act 1992, SO 1992, Chapter 23 as amended, regulates issuing of building permits, which under Section 8, Clause 2, the chief building official shall issue a permit unless the proposed building, construction or demolition will contradict the Act, the building code, or any other applicable law. And whereas Ontario Regulation 191-14, amending Regulation 332-12, sets out in Division A, Section 1413, the current definition of applicable law, which includes the Planning Act in response to planning. And whereas the chief building official may revoke a permit issued under the Building Code Act if it were issued under false, mistaken, or incorrect information. And whereas the ministerial zoning order issued on July 18, 2013 provided approval for 180 acres of prime agricultural land to be converted into a major industrial development to construct a distribution center located on the west side of Coleraine Drive between Healy Road and Holland Road. And whereas the ministerial zoning order is currently referred to the Ontario Municipal Board, therefore it be resolved that council directs the chief building official to revoke the building permit issued on July 18, 2013 until such time as the court decides on the minister's order. Any questions on that? Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, point of order. Can I have clarification from either our CAO or our legal counsel whether or not we can even discuss this?
Good afternoon, counsel. I'd like to advise you that no, you do not have any legal authority to move this motion, nor do you have any legal authority to vote on it.
Through you, Acting Mayor, McClure, as the clerk, I would recommend to the mover of the motion that it be withdrawn, but it's up to you need council's permission in order to withdraw this motion.
Okay, Mr. Councillor Groves, would you like to withdraw the motion?
Through you, Acting Mayor, if we have no legal right to do this, then it leaves no other choice but to withdraw the motion. So I will withdraw the motion.
Is Council okay with that? Okay. The show of hands, are you okay with that? Yep. Sure they are. What am I doing? Proclamations? No. Okay, this is a notice of motion printed with the agenda. Moved by Rob Mazzapelli, seconded by, who's that? Councillor Ennis. Okay, I'll just read the last three. It's a big long one here. You'll fall asleep by the time I finish it. Therefore, be resolved that staff be directed to work with His Worship, Mayor Thompson, to compose a letter to the Chair of Metrolinx to petition a timely delivery of the GO Rail service to Bolton. And further, that the letter requests Metrolinx to provide the details as to the timing of the project, financial commitment, as well as plans to acquire the lands needed. And that further, that a copy of this letter be sent to David Tilson, Member of Parliament, Sylvia Jones, Member of Parliament, the Regional Chairs of York and Peel, as well as the Mayors of Toronto, Vaughan, Mississauga, and Brampton, for their information and to seek their support. Any questions? Councillor Mazzapelli, were you wanting to comment?
I just wanted to briefly, as the mover, this is something important. It was in the earlier time frame in the big move plan. Unfortunately, they pushed it out. The province continually asks regional and local municipalities to plan and provide infrastructure for growth, be it residential or industrial. This is their infrastructure, and so they need to be a partner on that in providing that infrastructure. And so that's the nature of this request. We are at the beginnings of planning for our future and significant numbers. This is a key piece of that infrastructure, and we need a commitment from the province that they will deliver and deliver on time.
Okay. Councillor Groves.
Thank you. And just to add to the request, when we discussed this in the past, some of the comments made by other municipalities is with respect to ridership, that population, and we don't have enough to justify this. I will say that when we look at the catchment area that this will serve, it's a very, very large catchment area. It serves not just the community of Bolton or Caledon, but I look at it as an interregional transit system where it will serve, the catchment areas, Brampton, Vaughan, King, Tottenham, Orangeville, it's a very large catchment area, and I think that the minister needs to recognize that. And so, because it will help a great number of people to move them, and I think that that's what this was all about. I mean, the province is looking to get cars off the road, and this will get a lot of cars really off the road. So I fully support the motion. I'll ask for a recorded vote on that as well, please.
Okay, let's have a recorded vote on this.
Okay, a recorded vote's been called on the notice of motion. So all those in favor, please stand. And I see all the members of council that are in attendance have stood, so the motion is carried.
Is there any notices of motion presented at this meeting? Councillor Ennis?
Thank you, Acting Mayor McClure. Whereas the residents of the town of Caledon take great pride in the look and feel of their community, and whereas a number of residents allow their properties to become unsightly and may devalue the look and feel of the neighborhood, and whereas a number of complaints have been received pertaining to unclean and unsightly yard conditions, including but not limited to long grass and abandoned vehicles, and whereas current regulations and bylaw restrict the town from enforcing compliance earlier than 3 weeks from the date of the issuance of an order to comply, and whereas the period of time is considered to be too long for the town and affected neighbors in order to achieve compliance, now therefore be it resolved that the town staff research and identify best practices to address these types of issues in order to enable town staff to enforce compliance for these types of complaints in a more timely manner and report back to council in September 2015.
Okay, council inquiries, anybody? Annette, start your end. Nick? Joanna? Doug? Barb?
I'm hoping this is for Mr. Loveridge, just wanting to know if there's a status on the Orange Hall, what's happening with it?
Through you, Acting Mayor McClure, Councillor Shaughnessy, so the last motion had us waiting to take next steps until the end of the rec visioning study, and there was a second thing, and I apologize, that's gone in my head, so we're waiting till the end of that, and then we're going to proceed forward with next steps on the Orange Lodge.
When is the study coming to council, Laura?
Through you, Acting Mayor McClure, it will be presented to council on July 7th.
Okay, Rob? Jennifer? Okay, I'm done. Okay. Okay, moved by Rob Messapelli, seconded by Councillor Bafford. That minutes of the following meetings be adopted as written and distributed. Council meeting May 26, 2015, and closed council meeting May 26, 2015, and that the minutes of the following meetings be received as written and distributed. The audit committee meeting held May 26, 2015, and the Caledon Public Library meeting held April 20th, 2015. All in favor of this? Read the vote. Yep. Motion's carried. Okay, we have one proclamation. I think that doesn't look like it. Okay, moved by Councillor Groves, seconded by Nick DeBoer. Therefore, it be received that the Town of Caledon hereby proclaims the month of June 2015 to be Spina Bifida and Hyperhidrosis Awareness Month in the Town of Caledon. And we urge all citizens to give full consideration and attention to the spinal bifida and Hypothyroidism Association of Ontario for their work on behalf of those with spinal defect and their families. All those in favor of this? Okay. And we got some correspondence. Moved by Rob Messapelli, seconded by Councillor Bafford. That the correspondence items listed in the correspondence package for the June 16th, 2015 council meeting be received. All those in favor? It's carried. And moved by Councillor Bafford, seconded by Councillor DeBoer, that the following bylaws be read a first, second, and third time and finally passed. To amend the legal description of the William Faulkner property as set out in Town of Caledon bylaw number 2009-167. To amend the bylaw 2015-012, 2015 fees and charges for services provided by the Town of Caledon and planning applications, and to repeal bylaw 2013-131 as amended. and to amend bylaw 2007-128, being a bylaw to appoint employees for the town of Caledon to statutory positions, and to confirm the proceedings of the council for the corporation of the town of Caledon at its council meeting held on the 16th day of June 2015. All those in favor? So we have a motion to adjourn. Councillor Befford, seconded by Rob Barry. We adjourn.